From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we launch our 21st year on the air, and appreciate all the folks who have supported us along the way, all the underwriters and all the wonderful businesses that have contributed, and all of you who have listened. So we greatly, greatly appreciate that. Well, we are joined in studio by Eric Wandry, the new coordinator for rural ministries in the Office of Family and Faith Formation here in the diocese. Eric, good day.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Good to have you with us. Is that a new position, coordinator for rural ministries?
Well, the title is new, but the position has been around for about 3 years.
Yeah, okay. And how long have you been at this?
So I actually just finished 3 weeks. So
you're a veteran.
You could say that. I guess it's all relative. But yeah, I'm brand new here, and just learning the ropes and getting to know the situation in the North State.
Now I'm looking at your card, Palo Cedro. That's not in Sacramento.
No, it's a good drive. I actually live in Redding, so it's about 2.5 hours.
And it's, I see the address, Old 44, the road up to Mount Lassen.
Yep, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I just love that road.
Yeah, it's beautiful. When I drive to work in the morning, I see Mount Lassen in the horizon. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, I always said that, Diocese of Sacramento, they're always looking for some catchy phrase for vocations. And I've said they should put a picture of Mount Lassen, Mount Shasta, and say, give me men to match my mountains.
That's all you need.
People think of the Diocese of Sacramento, and maybe if you're not from this area and don't realize the geographic diversity of this diocese. I've told my kids many times, I said, if Mount Lassen or Mount Shasta were the only mountain in the world, the whole world would be here worshiping.
It's
because it's such a magnificent mountain.
Yeah, it's really striking.
Yeah.
I love it.
Especially the Cascades are all that way, Hood and Rainier, and they rise up out of nowhere. Yeah. They're not part of a range where you just can't tell, which one's Mount what? It's just, boom, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're all volcanic, which is
yes,
fascinating.
Yes, they are. Lassen of course, St. Helens blew up not that long, in 1980-81, but Lassen, I think, 1912, 1914, somewhere in there, it blew up as well.
Hopefully that doesn't mean we're due for another one.
can you imagine John Muir and some of those guys when they first saw?
Yeah.
It's just wild. So where did you grow up?
So I grew up in an Air Force family. My dad was an officer, and we moved every 2 or 3 years. Uh-huh. But I was born in Japan, and most of my dad's assignments were back east. Most recently, I'm from Chicago. I lived there for the past couple years, working for the Archdiocese.
Oh, of Chicago?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is it Archbishop Supich?
Yeah, that's right. Cardinal Supich,
It's Cardinal now. That's exactly right. I remember interviewing him, I believe, when he was in South Dakota.
Yeah, that sounds right. I think that's where he was before Chicago.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And looking at his name and saying, is it Cuppage? Is it,
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's very, very interesting. He's a real public figure, if you will, in Chicago.
He is, very much so. And he's doing a lot to innovate for the church in Chicago. Making some tough decisions, unfortunately, the way demographics are going, churches have to close, but he's accompanying that process with a whole cultural shift. He's implementing programs that are helping parishes go from maintenance to mission.
Right.
And I think he's doing a pretty good job at that.
I just read a story the other day about an organization, a private funding organization that was going to help with some of the Catholic schools in Chicago.
Catholic schools still have a very big presence in Chicago.
And they've done a lot of education in the so-called inner city and et cetera. And the Cristo Rey High School models all came out of Chicago.
The first
one came from Chicago.
How about that?
That was a Father Foley and a group of businessmen in Chicago got together and said, we got to do something.
No kidding.
And it's now the Cristo Rey Network, including a school here in Sacramento.
Wow, I didn't know it started there.
Yeah, it started right there in in Chicago. A lot of great things in the Windy City. What do they call it? The Second City?
Second City, Windy City. Yeah. It's a great town. I loved it.
It is, yeah. Yeah. So what brings you to California?
So to be quite honest, the big reason for me moving to California is my girlfriend.
I like honesty.
Yeah. She lives in Redding, and we were doing long distance for a while, and came to a point where somebody had to move, and it made sense for me to be that person.
Good.
Thank God I was made aware of this position and applied for it and was offered the job in December.
Wow. So what define coordinator for rural ministries? Does it have to be a town of less than 100? Have to be a mission church?
Not necessarily. So my area is the four northernmost deaneries.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Sutter Butte, Shasta, Siskiyou, and Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
Some parishes are very small. Others, like St. Isidore and Yuba City, like St. Isidore is one of the largest parishes in the diocese.
Yeah, you would not call that rural.
No.
Although you go a couple of miles in any direction, and it's very rural.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's in the North State. It falls in my geographic area.
Right.
So very broadly, what my job is, it's to be a liaison between the Office of Family and Faith Formation and the 30 parishes in the North State, giving strategic support to the pastors of those parishes.
Wow. And you're headquartered in Redding, though.
Or Palo Cedro.
Yeah. What's that, 5-10 miles? Something
It's about 9 miles, actually, so it's pretty close.
Yeah. Well, I always say that the North State, it's just God's country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love it. And moving here from Chicago, I'm excited to get up in the mountains and do some hiking.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you do it in the summer. I took, when our kids were little, we went up to Mount Lassen, which has literally a path to the top, as opposed to, I think, Mount Shasta. I don't know that you're freelancing, but I don't know if there's a trail all the way.
Yeah.
They got about 100 yards up it before it was enough. But there you are, just right there.
Yeah.
And you get the hot springs all around. And there's some, what do they call it, Bumpus Hell or something, where you see that it's just bubbling.
Oh, cool.
There's some, I think a guy named Bumpus discovered it or something.
Huh.
And it's all within Lassen Volcanic Park.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's... You're gonna take a week off and
you're whetting my appetite.
It's pretty cool stuff. Yeah. So by rural ministry, what do you do? I mean, besides converting cows and sheep, what do you see as your chief mission?
So to be very honest with you, we're evaluating what exactly strategic support looks like.
Right.
For the pastors.
Right.
So I can't give you a big detailed plan or program right now. What I'm doing for the first 90 days is I'm meeting with as many pastors as I can because I want to know from them what their biggest needs are.
Right.
I don't want to devise.
So you're going all the way up to Yreka and.
That's the plan.
Tule Lake and.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going everywhere.
Altars everywhere.
Yeah, I want to be on the ground. I want to see the churches. I want to see the communities. And I want to have FaceTime with the priests.
Yeah.
And up to this point, I've met with, individually, I've met with five priests. Mm-hmm. But I went to a deanery meeting in Sutter Buttes and met all the priests just in a meeting setting. But it's been very helpful for me to listen to what challenges they're facing. And I've been asking them, if I could do anything for you, what would that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And up to this point, most of the priests have been saying, we need help in forming lay people.
Mm-hmm.
The priests have their hands full administering the sacraments,
sure,
celebrating Mass, doing hospital visits, funerals.
Right.
Weddings, marriage prep. They have their hands full with all that stuff.
And a lot of them have travel obligations. If they've got two or three missions where, I interviewed a deacon one time who was located in Yreka, and he was going 40 miles one way and 40 miles another way.
Exactly.
Just you haven't done anything but be in your car at that point. You haven't administered a sacrament. Right. You haven't talked to anybody. You're just in your car.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of them have two or three churches that they're taking care of. Just on Monday, I was having lunch with Father Victor, who's at Sacred Heart in Maxwell. Mm-hmm. Well, he also has a church in Williams and another church in Arbuckle.
Right.
And he's got his hands full administering the sacraments at those three churches.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is we've got our hands full with the sacraments. If you could do anything to help us form lay people to be evangelizers in the communities of the parishes, that's going to help us a lot.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to think about right now is okay, I'm hearing what they need. What's that going to look like? And that's why I'll be discussing with my boss, Chris Owens, and priests. It's going to be an ongoing conversation for the next several months. What is my support going to look like specifically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ever since Vatican II, I mean, a lay mission project. We've got all kinds of lay things going on.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, we'd, go to Mass on Sunday, and Father did his thing, and then everything was up to Father, except the annual barbecue. Then, my dad would help.
Exactly.
Other than that, it was like, no, that's just like going to the doctor. The doctor does it, and the priest, And we didn't, it's way different now.
Yeah.
It's way different now in terms of expected lay participation.
Right.
It's your church.
Yeah.
Get in here and pitch in.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a tremendous need for more lay leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, I think in general, as Catholics, we're still catching up with that idea.
Yeah.
The idea that lay people need to take the initiative.
Right.
It's a cultural shift that is going to take time, but I think we're getting there.
So tell us about yourself. Are you a cradle Catholic? Or?
I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was baptized as a baby.
You were born in a country that has almost no Catholics.
That's right. Exactly. I was born on an American Air Force base there. I moved back. Well, we moved to the States when I was three, so I don't remember too much about that. But like I said, every two or three years we were moving. Mm-hmm. So I lived in Ohio. I lived in Florida. I lived in Alabama. I lived in Northern Virginia. Then when I was in high school, after my freshman year, I made a big decision for a 15-year-old. I decided to go to a high school seminary.
Ah.
And
whereabouts?
New Hampshire.
Oh.
At the time, my family was living in central Georgia, so it was a good distance away. But I really felt a desire to give that a shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to this high school seminary.
Who was running the seminary?
So it was run by a religious order known as the Legionaries of Christ.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
who've had some difficulties.
Exactly. Exactly. And I actually...
They had a very big presence here in Sacramento with the University of Sacramento.
Right. And they used to run a parish in Sacramento.
And they used to run a parish.
So this was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So at that point... the Legion of Christ was still going pretty strong, and after I finished high school, I decided to join their novitiate. So I ended up spending most of my 20s with the Legion of Christ before discerning
moving toward the priesthood or
moving
not?
Towards the priesthood. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was in their formation program, which is a long formation program, all the way up until theology. So I stayed in long enough to get a master's degree in philosophy.
Wait, that's still in New Hampshire, or was that someplace else?
Different places. Yeah. So I studied philosophy. They used to have a campus in New York, just outside of New York City. And then I finished up in Rome, where they still had a campus.
Right.
So I spent a number of years with them before getting to know myself better, getting to know the congregation better, and realizing that I could serve the church more effectively as a layperson.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I decided to go in a different direction. And since leaving the seminary path, I've worked for the Archdiocese of New York, Archdiocese of Chicago, and now for the Diocese of Sacramento.
And was it Cardinal Egan in New York?
Actually, Cardinal Dolan.
Cardinal Dolan.
Yeah.
I did 5 years working for the Catholic Channel on Sirius, and which is headquartered in New York, and I broadcast from Sacramento while doing the Bishop's Hour as well, and got to meet. They'd take us back to New York every now and then. You know, they did some broadcasting from there, but they also had Gus Lloyd in Tampa and me out here in Sacramento, and we got to meet and actually interview Cardinal Dolan a few times. You know, and I remember, you know, every time we're selecting a new pope, that his name comes up. You know, maybe the first American pope. You know, and you see him on the Today Show, and you see him. You know, and. Yeah. Just such a gregarious guy. But when I first started, it was Cardinal Egan.
Right.
And I think Cardinal Dolan was still in Milwaukee.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cardinal Dolan.
As an archbishop.
Yeah. Yeah. He's Cardinal Dolan's really larger than life. And,
Very much so.
Big personality. And I think he's doing well in there in New York.
Oh, he's made for New York.
No
question. I mean, I remember, and I don't watch the Today Show much anymore, but we used to have it on in the mornings, and it seemed like every other day there'd be Cardinal Dolan, and it wasn't like usually on some big church issue. It's just he was a personality.
Yeah, yeah.
They wanted his take on the Yankees.
Exactly. I remember when he was first installed as Archbishop of New York, the next day the New York Post had a big picture of him, and the headline was, "Thank God."
Thank God, yeah.
They're just happy to have him there.
Yeah, I remember one time I was having a one-on-one interview with him, and it was at his residence, and I decided I better go to Mass first, you know. So I go to St. Patrick's, you know, and the big cathedral, and then you just sort of just almost across the street, there's his residence, and kind of knock on the door. Somebody let me in, and he wasn't in his office. It was about 9 a.m, and somebody says, "Cardinal, your interviewer is here. You know, your guest is here." And he says, "Oh, okay, just a minute." And he says, "Just go out in the kitchen there and help yourself. There's a little fridge under the counter, you know." And I go out there, and there's three or four bottles of beer and some you know, Perrier or something, Perrier, and I'm thinking, this is great.
That sounds exactly like it.
Yeah. And then so he's sitting on his side of the desk, and I'm with a little microphone, you know, just that we kind of crammed in there because his desk has just got all kinds of stuff on it, and. At some point in the conversation, I ask him a question, and he says, "Well, you know, Ed," and my name's Bob, and one of his aides is over there going, mortified, you know, just mortified, rushes over with a handwritten note. "It's Bob." So that's my Cardinal Dolan story.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. He puts people at ease.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's why so many folks love him.
Yeah, well, he's beloved, and you know, he's got a tough job there, and you know, he's had to close a few schools and consolidate some parishes, and boy, that's never any fun for any bishop, the emotions that are attached to it.
Yeah.
I know in my hometown of Davis, the church I went to growing up became the Newman Center for the campus, which is fine because it's still there and I can still go to Mass there.
Right.
But they built a new church in another part of town. But now that old church has pretty much been condemned. It's fallen apart, you know. You know, it's not earthquake safe, and it's like, oh, they condemned my church.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
It's like I can't even walk in that building, even though it's been decommissioned as a church. You know, I mean, it was. I think the Newman Center was. You know, they got couches in there and stuff, and they meet there, and it's a hall now.
Yeah,
but it's had the bell tower, and it still looks like the church I went to, the brick church on the corner, you know?
Yeah.
And it's iconic. It's right in the center of town and probably the busiest intersection in town near the busiest park. And yeah. And just, you know, and I think, man, if I were in a big city or something and they just announced, we're closing your parish.
Yeah.
And you're gonna merge with, you know,
yeah,
Saint somebody else. You know?
Yeah.
How hard that is.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And it's interesting because I've seen that dynamic of church closings in New York City and also in Chicago, which both of those cities have a very strong Catholic tradition.
Right.
And there was one time in New York City, this older priest was telling me, you could hit a golf ball from one church to another.
Yeah.
All over the city.
Yeah.
You can make your way from Staten Island to the northern part of the Bronx just hitting the golf ball from one church to another. That's how many churches are there.
Yeah.
And Chicago, if you climb up in a taller building, you look around, you're going to see the spires of Catholic churches all over the place.
Well, and more so in Chicago and New York and those areas, Buffalo, ethnic church, almost sure. ethnic church. This was the Polish neighborhood, or this
sure.
was the Italian neighborhood. Or,
yeah.
You don't see that so much in the West. You see it a little bit in San Francisco and some in Los Angeles, but most, you know, most of us, we didn't have a kind of like a parish. I mean, my brother-in-law from Philadelphia, he said, nobody asked you what neighborhood that you lived in. They asked you what parish you belonged
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
Then they knew if you were Italian or Polish or what you were.
By the parish.
Yeah, by the parish.
Yeah.
And that adds sort of another layer of when it closes of just right, kind of a knife through the heart.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really amazing how tightly knit the churches were to their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I lived and worked for a year at a parish in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it used to be a very Irish neighborhood. And at one point in time, on Sunday mornings, there'd be two masses happening at the same time, one upstairs, one downstairs in the basement, because there were so many people coming to mass.
Wow.
And so the parish has developed around that culture of just all you have to do in the morning is open the doors and the church will fill up. Now, throughout the country, the American church is adapting from that old model to a model that has to be more outgoing.
Right.
It's not enough to just open the doors on Sunday morning now. We have to go out into the streets. We have to find ways
exactly.
to get people into the pews.
Yeah. So what do you see as the biggest challenge in your job?
I think it's the challenge that every Catholic church is facing right now, which is connecting with younger generations, connecting with millennials, connecting with Gen Z, who are now the older Gen Zers are almost getting ready to graduate college. How do we connect with them? How do we make the church relevant to them? And that's a big challenge, and it's there's no silver bullet for it, and it's going to take time to address that issue, but there's hope. I've been meeting some great priests over the past couple weeks who are just young, energetic, and not, some of them not so young, but still very, very determined and working really hard to reach out to their communities. And that gives me hope. I think with leadership like that, good things are going to happen. We need to work hard, but good things are going to happen.
Same challenge for the church nationally?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, without a doubt. Now, I think in my part of the state, there's the added element of having very large Latino communities.
Yeah.
And Latino communities bring so much life and vibrancy to the church. But we can't pretend that we can treat a Spanish-speaking community the way we treat an English-speaking community.
Yeah.
It's a very different culture.
Right.
In Spanish-speaking parishes, the priest is still very much the center of everything.
Sure.
And there's still a lot of dependence on the leadership of the priest. And many Latinos are working 12 to 14 hour days. And so what you can expect from them as volunteers is different from what you can expect from people who aren't working that much every day. So it's just different challenges that we have to be cognizant of.
Right.
And I'm trying to be very careful as I come up with different modes of support for the pastors, that it's not one size fits all.
Right.
It has to be customized to the situation of each parish.
Right. And you know, that the growth of the church in the United States and in California has primarily been Hispanic.
Oh, for sure.
In the last, about 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah. But even there, we're facing our own challenges.
Sure. Absolutely.
Just yesterday, I was having lunch with Father Orlando, who is the pastor of Immaculate Conception in Corning.
Mm-hmm.
And 80% of his parish is Hispanic.
Right.
He was telling me that in that small town of Corning, there are 21 other churches, non-Catholic churches.
There are.
And
drive right down the main street, you can see them.
Exactly. And those churches are attracting people away from his parish. So when I was asking him, how can I support your work? He was saying, I need something that's going to strengthen the faith of my parishioners. Mm-hmm. That's going to help them realize that there is a difference between the Catholic Church and Protestant churches, and help them realize the beauty of the Catholic faith.
Right.
So that's an example of a unique challenge to one parish.
Yeah, you see that a lot. You see it in South America too, apparently.
For sure.
You know, a lot of the evangelical are making inroads.
Yeah.
So if you've been to Corning, have you been to the Olive Pit?
No, I haven't, actually.
You have to go in there.
Okay.
Absolutely have to go in the Olive Pit. It is a legend in that town. For travelers all over, you have to go to Granzella's in Williams.
Oh, actually, I did go there.
Did you go there?
Yeah, I went there with Father Victor.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, that's a must.
We had a lunch meeting there.
And Louis Cairo's in Williams.
Okay.
A great Italian restaurant.
All right.
Yeah, and I remember when my wife, when she was visiting from Montana, and before we got married, and shortly before we got married, and I took her to the Olive Pit in Corning. And they have tastings. I mean, for free. You just here's all of our, you know, stuffed with feta cheese or almonds or whatever. And I had tasted a habanero olive before. Very hot. It was stuffed with a habanero pepper.
Wow.
And I said, he said, you got to try these. They're really good. They're sweet. You know? I went to confession afterwards. Yeah. And she pops it in. And she says, well, you do it too. And so I pop it in. But I don't. I just kind of put it over here in my cheek, you know. I didn't crunch it. She crunched it, and she's redhead too.
Oh wow!
She turned. I thought she was gonna die. She turned beet red. She started crying. Started sweating. And she looks at me and she says, "How come it didn't affect you?" And I took it out of. She still married me.
Yeah, I'm glad she didn't hold that against you.
So yeah, no. Go to the Olive Pit in Corning.
That's good to know.
You will. You'll like it. Yeah. Well, awfully, awfully good to have you, Eric.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Prayers and best wishes go with you. Yeah. And I'm sure you've got good tires on your car.
I do.
Good.
I do. And I'm getting ready to put a lot of miles on it. Already in 3 weeks, I put about 1,500 miles on my car.
Oh, wow. Well, anytime you are going into some little town in the North State, give me a call and I'll tell you where to get the best burger.
I appreciate that. I'll take you up on that.
Hey, thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. Back with more in the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916 916- 972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hey, this is Chris Owens. I'm the director of the Office of Family and Faith Formation for the Diocese of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Chris, and thanks for all you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Jennifer Campbell joins us, the director of Camp Pendola. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
You got a very gold badge on there. Is that solid gold?
No. Yeah, it's the name tag we wear, and we're working in the pastoral center.
I was telling someone, I said, when I first started here 21 years ago on the radio, nobody was wearing name tags.
Yeah.
And now they're all wearing name tags. Are they worried I'm going to forget their names?
Well, we wear name tags when we're in, our department does, when we're in the building, just so everyone knows who we are. And then if we're in meeting with, you know, youth ministers or pastors.
It's always good.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good.
I think so. I think it's always nice.
But you know how it is, like you're at a reception or something, mm-hmm. and everybody's got the paper name tag on.
Right.
It's somebody you're supposed to know, but you've forgotten their name.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking you in the eye, and it's real hard to look down at their name tag because they know you're looking at their name tag, which means you forgot their name.
When I used to do a VBS at my parish, and it's a secret, but it's okay. I'll let it slide now. What the kids always were so excited that I knew everyone's name.
Uh-huh.
They all were wearing name tags.
She's so good. She remembered my name.
Yeah, they were all excited, and I knew all of their names because they were wearing name tags.
The worst part, I mean, imagine if everybody in the world wore a name tag. You actually would not remember their name because you wouldn't have to remember it.
Right. It's like with our phones now. No one knows anyone's phone numbers.
Yeah, that's right. That's
completely, they're all there.
That's crazy.
An experience we don't have to worry about when we come to camp, though, because our phones do not work.
Yes. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, no cell service up there. It's one of the benefits of Camp Pendola.
It's so weird. People say, well, you know, I have four teenagers, you know, and it's like, I think, well, when I was a teenager, I didn't have a phone.
Right. I didn't either.
We're riding our bike all over town, and mm-hmm. you know, I don't know how our parents didn't just worry to death.
The real problem, I think, though,
it's like they do have a phone, and you call them and they don't answer it. You go, What's going on?
Yeah,
you know, that's
true.
Because it's at least text me.
At least text me and tell me where you're okay.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. We don't have phones at camp, and as I say when I visit all the classrooms, because you know, even as young as like fourth, fifth grade, they're worrying about not having electronics at camp.
Yeah.
And I just remind them, your parents survived, and so will you.
And so will you. Yeah. Do their thumbs start to twitch though when they don't have a phone?
Some of them on like day one or two, but by end of day two, they're like, "Phone? What phone? Like, why do I need a phone?"
I'm
like,
wondering if all these kids are going to end up with carpal tunnel syndrome of the thumb.
Possibly. You know, it happens, but I think it's helpful to put those down for a week at a time. And
It is.
It's so good, and to really have conversations with people, and even at dinner to have your phone not on the table or at the table, to really allow for that growth. So we will see.
So all kinds of exciting things.
Yes.
Up in the pines. I like that expression.
Always up in the pines. Yeah. It's kind of our tagline for camp. It's the first line of our camp song. So
Is this up to what, number 60, 61?
Yeah, 60. We are celebrating 60 years of summers up in the Pines. It's very exciting. So this year's going to be a big celebration summer. We'll be celebrating and with every week during our themes. But we have some, we're trying to, you know, revamp again our teen programming. And so we've got some new things for them. Last year we started a new trip. It was successful. So we'll continue that.
Where's the trip to?
So we have an adventure trip. We call it our adventure trip, and it's half canoeing, half backpacking. So they actually will stay and backpack around camp, not too far in, you're still in Tahoe National Forest.
But they're spending the night out in the woods.
They're out in the woods, yes. And then they're hiking on the second day. They're going to hike to the lake, which is Bullard's Bar. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They'll hike to the lake. And then we will bring canoes out to them, and they will spend the next 2 days canoeing.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was a fun trip last year. So we're hoping to have the same success with it again. And we have our backpacking trip that we always do, where they hike on the PCT. And then our two canoe trips, which are for starting in seventh grade, younger campers, those do fill up pretty fast. I can tell you the girls' trip is half full already. So,
really?
Yeah, we started registration a little early this year, but in the last week or two, that trip has started to fill. So we're at about the halfway point, and we can take up to 12 girls on that trip because we run out of canoe space.
Yeah. How many kids on a canoe?
Two.
Two.
We can put three if we need to, but it's... The third person is just sits in the canoe. There's no need for them to paddle. So we just, it's better if we can just put two in there.
Are there campsites at Bullard's Bar?
There are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's campsites that you can really only get to by boat.
Uh-huh.
So we reserve some of those for them to use, and it's pretty fun.
Are there motorized boats on Bullard's Bar as well?
There are some motorized boats on Bullard's
People
Bar.
People water ski and stuff?
Yeah, there'll be some of that. Yeah. They do a pretty good job of avoiding it and kind of those popular areas.
Yeah.
Because most of those people are, you know, they're driving in and ramping their boats.
And that's the Yuba River?
It is.
Yeah.
It is the Yuba River. It's a beautiful lake. Especially we go on the canoe trips in June. It's pretty full still then, and it's... Mm-hmm. I'm always like this.
This is, believe it or not, an artificial lake. It's a dam.
It is. It is a dammed lake, and so it's an artificial lake. But it's really beautiful. And then you're just surrounded by trees, and there's just not a lot of traffic around it. So it's really nice up there. And the kids really enjoy that trip. There's some hidden waterfalls that you can really only get to by boat.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll go. We send them out to find them, and that's the challenge every year. Is did you find the waterfalls? Like when they come back, and they're like, we tried, we didn't find them, or yeah, we found them, or they get really excited about that. So
wow. Yeah. So how can people sign up?
So they can sign up for camp at our website, which is pendola.org. And Pendola is spelled just like it sounds, PENDOLA.org. So they can sign up for that. They can get more information about those trips. They can also get more information about, we have a specific teen week, which this year it's our Invaders Week again, which is...
Invaders of the night.
Invaders of the night. We stay up very late. We have breakfast for dinner and dinner for breakfast one day. And I can tell you have not lived until you've had scrambled eggs under black light.
Oh, wow.
I understand where green eggs and ham comes from, because they are definitely a little green when they glow. But it is kind of funny to eat them that way.
Yeah.
You can also, so that's one of the things. We'll do a dance party that week. All the things we do normally at camp, but just much later. It does allow us to do a lot more stargazing and to really get to see, because we're up so late, to get to see some really good constellations and
how late do you stay up?
So what the latest we'll stay up during that week, because it gets later and later each night, is 2.
It's pretty late.
Depends on which side you're looking at it from, but yeah, it's pretty late.
And then how late do they sleep?
Every night, every day it's different. So that day they won't have breakfast until noon, but then we'll have... And then we'll go to bed at 2. But the next day, we're going to try to build our way back up to the regular timing. So the next day, we'll be up, you know, closer to 10. So it's a lot of adjusting to staff. Every year, the staff love that week because it is a lot of fun. There's activities we get to do.
So is the whole camp empty?
The whole camp.
Does
the weird sleep schedule. Right. Yeah. I mean, some of us adults still have to, like... answer emails and work and function in the morning because the pastoral center is still open. Yeah. So Deacon Kevin, my supervisor, is still sending me messages and things to do. But
so you have internet access.
We do. We have Wi-Fi access for the staff because we have to. It's a way, and that's how we can communicate with parents. We have a landline.
Parents are comfortable. Yeah. That it's not like you're incommunicado.
No, we're not completely. No, we have internet access. We have for the staff, and we have things like that. So even for the staff and the like just our counseling staff, will have access to be able to check their email and because they're there, you know, for 10 weeks. So sometimes they have to, you know, register for classes in the middle of the summer and they have that opportunity. Yeah.
Or apply for their student loan.
Apply for their student loan. Make sure everything is okay.
And do you still need counselors?
We do.
And you pay them well.
We do. We starting salary is $442 a week. We are looking for guys, especially.
Including room and board.
Including room and board.
That's amazing.
It's a pretty good salary, I think, especially since there's nowhere to spend it up there. So you're saving it.
It's for 10 weeks?
10 weeks. Yeah.
$4,400
a week of training. And then we'll.
And like you say, no place to spend it.
No place to spend it. And we also pay for your training. So CPR, first aid, mm-hmm. as well as lifeguarding. So.
Those are good certificates.
And those are good certificates to have, especially when you're back at school. I know one of our staff members, when she went away to college, she started working at like the rec center they have at her school as a lifeguard. And that, you know, it's a great part-time job to have when you're back in school, because especially at the rec center at your on your campus, you know, they understand school schedules and work with you. So, it does give you some of those job skills that, and useful tools that you'll have. And we pay for those as well.
Boy, that's great.
Yeah. It's a pretty good job. So if you know anybody who's looking for 18. A summer job, they need to be 18, high school graduate. In college is great. Some experience working with young people is, an added benefit. You don't need to be super outdoorsy or have a lot of experience camping. We'll teach you those skills that you need to have. You just have to be willing to try something new, I think would be the best attitude to have towards the whole thing.
And not be afraid of critters in the night, in the dark.
I mean, you can still be a little afraid of those, but
healthy fear.
I think a healthy fear of most things is good to have.
Have you ever had a bear there?
Mm-hmm.
You have.
We have.
Walking right through. Just browsing.
Yeah. Well, one of them found and was able to open the freezer, the drop freezer that we had stored food in off season and ate an entire chest full of tater tots.
my wife and one of my daughters.
We fixed that door now.
We were up in South Lake Tahoe, the city.
Yeah.
In the fall. And this last fall, and I was doing something, and they were having lunch, and then we're going to meet up. They said, "Oh, we're walking at kind of the main drag in South Shore there, and we're gonna start walking. Bring the car down. We'll be at the corner of here." And just as I'm getting there, I get a text from them saying, "There's a bear." And I go, "What do you mean? There's a bear? There's a bear."
Oh goodness!
And it was like a Denny's. I think it was a Denny's. It was in the parking lot of the Denny's. And so we're watching, and there was a grocery store and kind of attached around kind of a little strip mall.
Right.
And this bear, you know, we all got in the car, and so we're just kind of watching him from a distance. And he goes up to a pickup truck, opens the door of the pickup truck, and just climbs in. And I'm like, really? Just like he owned the truck?
Right. No. And honestly, like we have had, you know, a bear come into camp, but it's never when campers are around. It's generally when it's like just the staff or an overnight, or like even like, you know, the nights before all the staff arrive, and it'll be like myself and like two other of the leadership team members. And it's just because we're not everywhere. There's not a lot of noise. Yeah. But as soon as there's kids and there's noise, not a problem. I always remind the campers because I talk to a naturalist to get like, well, what can we do? Because, you know, especially once this bear realized where we kept our bonus food that he ate. What can we do? And he said, well, what I would suggest is like, you know, leaving windows, like if you have, make sure your windows are closed, obviously, but leave like the radio playing so that there's lots of noise. and then also make a scarecrow and put it in the window out of like kids' clothing that has been used and not washed yet. Huh. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, kids apparently put off an odor that bears want nothing to do with.
Really?
And so I just remind kids, like, well, apparently you are too stinky and too loud for the bears to come near us. So you keep me safe. And they always they laugh, but it's true. And honestly, when kids are in camp, it's not ever an issue. It's just on those like rare occasions that.
So it's a bear crow.
Yeah,
it's a scare bear.
Scare bear.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a scare bear. I don't know. It was just so funny, and I couldn't believe the natural said it to me. But wow. Yeah, I mean, you know, and then.
Do you have other critters? Do you have skunks, porcupines?
Skunks, not very often, not really. I haven't seen porcupine, but fox every once in a while we'll see. We have a lot of lizards that hang around camp. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, my assistant director, Joe Rose, has a dog. And since the dog has been living in camp, mm-hmm. we've seen a whole lot less critters because I think she has definitely made sure they know this is her house and not theirs.
Yeah.
And I'm actually good with that. So, but yeah, a lot of like, you know, we'll see squirrels. We can hear the frogs at night. We don't necessarily see them at the pond, but it's kind of cool to like, it's so quiet and peaceful and you can hear frogs croaking at night, which is not yeah. something I ever grew up listening to or being able to hear very often. And there's in the pond, there's salamanders and turtles every once in a while and things like that. So
do you ever go fishing
not in the pond. The kids that go on the canoe trip we let them bring, if they'd like to, you know, fishing tackle mm-hmm. and all that stuff. As long as they know that if they catch it, they have to clean it.
Yeah.
That was a rule that my dad taught me. So if I caught it,
my
I had to
taught
do
me the yeah. same rule.
If I was going to fish, yeah. I had to do the whole thing. So, which they get really excited about. A couple of times they'll call us and ask us what kind of fish are in the pond in that lake, and yeah. I'm like, let me look that up, because it's fed. But yeah, so they'll bring them every once in a while. But there's not really fish in the pond because it's man-made. So yeah. we close it off each year. So I think, you know, occasionally there'll be like some minnows maybe that kind of yeah. hop through. Hop isn't the right word. But.
I think minnows, they spontaneously generate. You put water up.
Yeah.
There they are.
And you've got a few, and then you're like, where'd they come from?
Yeah. You see it okay. The back alley where the water collects. Like,
yeah.
Like, and what?
How did that happen?
How did that happen?
Yeah. So I think last summer.
Did they fly in?
Yeah. Sounds like it. I think last summer we saw a few. I haven't actually seen them, but the staff have keep telling me that I'm wrong. And I'm like, okay, I believe you. I just haven't seen them, but. I don't spend a lot of time swimming in the pond. I kind of stay on the shore. Yeah. It's a little cold for me.
I'm trying to think of all the different beavers.
Haven't seen them. I know that
the ones that wash their food.
Raccoons. Have yeah. seen raccoons. Yeah, I have seen those.
Yeah.
Raccoons are creepy, but, you know.
They're cute, but they'll get in the food, too.
They will. Yeah, they will. That's, you know, but we do a really good job of making sure that all of our food trash is in our dumpster that's fully closed. We have a bear-proof one, so.
Yeah.
We spend a lot of time making sure that we're not making it easy for critters to, like, because I don't know if you know this about like critters getting into your trash, they don't tend to put it back in the dumpster. They just kind of spread it around yeah. everywhere, yeah. and then you get to spend a day cleaning it up. So, yeah. and I don't like that.
Yeah.
I threw it away once. I don't want to do it twice. So, you know, we try to do our best to keep them out. But
so there's 10 weeks for the counselors.
Yeah.
What are the dates of that?
So the dates for the counselors, they come on June 7th, and then they will go home on August 16th, which is a Sunday, because they're going to stay and help us with our end of season celebration, uh-huh. which is this year. It's a big one, 60 years. So it's a time where previous campers, counselors, like staff from all the way back will come and spend the weekend with us, and we'll do a big campfire, which the staff will lead. And have out activities, and it's a really good time for people who were there in the 60s, 70s, 80s, yeah. 90s, early 2000s, to come and kind of reminisce about camp and share stories. And I know like last summer, my staff were just really intrigued with like the experiences that staffers had from in the like 70s and 80s of like yeah. how different camp was and yet how the same it is. And so many things are similar. And that so many things are different. So
is there recorded history of like what did they do the first year? What did they do the second year?
There is some, but it's not, I guess when you're living it, you don't necessarily record everything. Yeah. Is kind of what I'm noticing. We have some pictures and I try to post those on our Instagram and Facebook, usually on Thursday. So so for Throwback Thursday, I'll try to post stuff. But and I found some schedules and, you know, looking back and I'm like going through some old files and finding things of like what they did and mm-hmm. how things were different. And the pictures are kind of like the most telling. It's yeah. like it's funny because it looks like the kids almost wore uniforms to camp uh-huh. Back in the first couple of years because they're all wearing like in every picture, they're all wearing the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And I haven't found a packing list yet to know for sure. But like there's these little hats most of them are wearing that are all the same. And I mean, it could have just been the fashion, but it's just so I mean, that's 30 strange. Kids wearing yeah. the exact same thing. But then like in the 60s, camp was run by an order of sisters. So it's like nice. Mm-hmm. You're seeing, you know, that. And the different priests that have been up there.
They were running it, but it was still the belonged to the diocese
It belonged to the diocese yeah. from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Bishop, was it Bell?
Bell, I think.
Yeah, I think it was Bell. Actually picked out which plot of land it would be. So yeah, it was always part of the diocese, and it was just an order of sisters that Father Keith Kinney had worked with, and mm-hmm. so he asked them to come up, and so they, you know, did the kitchen, ran the health center, yeah. that kind of stuff. I think for at least the first couple of years mm-hmm. of camp is looking at the pictures what I've seen. So
how long have you been doing it?
Since 2016. So this will be my fourth summer.
So has the curriculum changed at all?
Every year I try to like add or change a little bit just to kind of spice things up, or a lot of what I'm focusing on is changing up how we're kind of staffing to be more efficient mm-hmm. with that. And then this year I'm really doing a big push with our leadership programs. We have two different ones, one for freshmen and sophomores. So it's called our SILT program, which is campers leadership training. And then our CIT program, which is counselors in training. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to remember all these acronyms. But I really focused this year. I'm really focusing on that and really changing up that curriculum and making it. Yes, they're learning how to be great counselors, but also how to live out Christian leadership, so that it's applicable skills when they're back in their mm-hmm. parishes. And so that, you know, those kind of things are changing, you know, changing up games every once in a while. There's just so much great rich tradition. I don't want to. I'm just not the kind of person that's going to come in and be like, well. I'm here. Let's new. We're changing everything. Yeah. So, you know, adding a new theme here and there. Like I had some staff who were really excited about doing a spy theme. So that's why we're doing a Mission Impossible theme mm-hmm. this year. Bringing back themes they hadn't done since like 2013. We're doing bringing back like Christmas in July, mm-hmm. which is always a fun. It's always fun to do those kind of things in the middle yeah. of summer. So that kind of stuff, just bringing back old traditions. When I meet with or talk to old counselors, like hearing their stories of activities that they used to do, trying to find ways to bring those back, adding some new games, like adding Gaga Ball, and which was a really big hit when I brought that in two years ago.
Gaga Ball.
It is. It's a game that's really popular at camps and schools, and it's you create like a pit of that's walled, and it can have like between 6 and 8 wall sides. My dad actually built the one for us that we have at camp. It's portable, and the kids, everyone who's going to play, it's stands on the outside inside the pit, but like with their on the outside edge holding the wall, and then you throw the ball in, and it's like a dodgeball kind of a ball. Mm-hmm. And they can't throw it. They have to roll it. And they try to tag other people out so that they're the last, like, man standing. And you can do it with teams, or you can just do it, like, everyone against everyone, which is usually what we do.
Is it going to be in the Olympics this year?
It really should be. Like, it's pretty intense. Some of these kids get really into it. And I've been to different like camp meetings, and we'll do like Gaga Ball tournaments and with like staff, like adults.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's always fun. Like it's one of the games I make sure we play during staff training because I want them all to know the rules, but it's also fun and kind of like a way to blow off some steam, and, you know, and the kids love it when the staff play with them, the games. And it's one of the, like, they love when they get them out. Of course the kids yeah. do.
So Is there some camp organization where you guys all have a convention and you talk shop? And...
Yeah. So there's the ACA. It's the American Camping Association Conference. It's actually in 2 weeks and it's in San Diego this year. So I'm really excited I get to go, mostly because it is in our own state. So it'll be, I think there'll be more local people that I can kind of connect with. But it's also got a great exhibit hall, so I can find new activities that we can try to bring to camp. This year, my goal is to find one new thing, like a something different for the pond, or just some new game that I can figure out to have at camp, so that we can really get some something that's like a new tradition and also engages kids in a different way. So, yeah,
I think I'd have it in Honolulu next year or somewhere.
I mean, that would be great.
San Diego's pretty nice, so.
But San Diego is lovely.
It's a nice city.
It's a nice city. The weather is always the same.
It's exactly the same. Always, never changes.
Never changes. It's always really
about
nice.
72.
Yeah. I was looking at the weather because I'm going in a few weeks, and I was like, "Oh, it's gonna be so nice. I might not have to bring like a bunch of sweaters."
Yeah.
So, because last year it was in Tennessee, I was freezing and it was raining the entire time.
And it's this time of year.
Yeah. It's always this time of year. So.
Yeah, you definitely want San Diego.
Yes, San Diego's that's a much better option.
So Pandola.org.
Pandola.org. Registration has been open. If you register before May 15th, you get the early bird discount. And if you need scholarships, please send me an email. We will work that. I don't want any kid to think they cannot come to camp or worrying about it because of money. Like, we will figure out a way to make that work. And also, if you don't want to call me, talk to your Knights of Columbus. A lot of the Knights of Columbus will help with scholarships, especially to camp. Youth ministry and supporting youth is one of their pillars. So reach out to your Knights of Columbus at your parish. But also, give me a call. I don't want your kid to miss out on camp because you're worried about money.
Very good. Jennifer, always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. wanted my savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love.